Jeans. It is the Bob McCowan podcast for a Monday. I am the aforementioned. That is John Shannon, if you're watching on YouTube. And we have no guest today. We thought the two of us would just chatter about what happened on the weekend. And there was plenty. Plenty to discuss, plenty things to address.
Almost too much. Almost too much.
No, it's never too much.
Okay.
I know the NBA playoffs probably now in this country are not exactly at the top of the list of interest. And I think you would concede, John, that once the Toronto Raptors are out of the picture, interest wanes dramatically. Having said that, if you were sitting around last night and watched a basketball game, you watched Miami try and avoid going down 3-0 to the LA Lakers, and they did that in a rather dramatic fashion. A very typical, I thought, of what we perceive every basketball game to be, a series of runs by one team and then another. And, you know, your team's up 13 and you think, okay, got a little comfort zone. And 2 minutes later, the other team is up by five. And that's really what happened last night. But at the end of the day, the performance of Jimmy Butler was something that I think we should talk a little bit about. 40 points, triple-double, only the third player in the history of the NBA to register a triple-double while scoring 40 points. Only the third. I think Jerry West, LeBron, and now Jimmy Butler. And I guess the question for me, and I know the answer to it, but when you watch something like Butler's performance, aren't you amazed that he can't do that on some kind of regular basis?
Yeah, but at the same time, and Butler was magnificent, and with Butler being so good, Kelly Olynyk looked better too. I mean, that was a really good sidebar for Canadian basketball fans. But I put this on the Lakers. I put this on because I think the Lakers did what I did after game two. Hit that cruise control button. I think that they and you know, these guys are elite basketball players on the other side. Miami has some pride. There is some experience. There's some really good coaching. And as great as Butler was, and he was spectacular. By the way, that's only the fourth time that any player that's gone head to head with LeBron at both ends of the court, LeBron is allowed a triple double. And the interesting thing about it, that's the first time it wasn't a guy from the Golden State Warriors. And Butler, I don't want to discount what he did. But to me, Anthony Davis was not effective. I mean, the Lakers appeared at times half invested in this game because I think they thought they were going to sweep after game two.
Butler was
great. The thing that got me last night about it was, what were the Philadelphia 76ers thinking when they go acquire Butler and then they couldn't keep him? I mean, he was such a catalyst for them.
Well, couldn't keep him or chose not to keep him.
Right. Yeah. Couldn't or wouldn't. That's a good way. And when you think about what's going on there now that Doc Rivers is there, wouldn't Jimmy Butler fit perfect in Philadelphia?
Well, I guess, yeah. I guess my point is, and I suppose we all know the answer to this, but when you see a player play the way he did, I mean, it was so impressive, and he looked like he could do whatever he wanted to do.
Oh, yeah.
He just didn't have, you know, there are guys that have a hot hand, you know, and shoot threes and will hit eight or nine threes in a night and get a big point total. Well, that can happen. Anybody can do that. But Butler did everything. I mean, he drove to the basket on a consistent basis. You know, he had the triple-double, so he had plenty of assists and plenty of rebounds. I mean, he played like a superstar. And I must tell you, while I respect Jimmy Butler's play overall and during his career, I never would put him in the superstar category. Would you?
Not in the last 5 years, but this was the hype that was supposed to, when he came and became a pro, this is what he was supposed to be like. And it was his inconsistency in Minnesota and his, you know, his trash talking and his confidence that drove people nuts at times. And there were times last year in Philadelphia after the trade that he was so much fun to watch. And you knew what he could contribute on a team like this. This is now his team. He's a lot more mature now. I mean, even watching him post-game last night discuss it, he was a lot less boastful, a lot more really kind of politically correct. Even though he did talk a little bit about trash talking, I just you know what, at his age, he's grown up, he's playing better, but I think the Lakers delivered this one to them on a platter.
Well, inconsistency is it seems to be inherent among most players in the National Basketball Association. I mean, you know, LeBron had a decent night. I think he scored 25, something like that.
But Kelly Olynyk outplayed Anthony Davis in my mind. Kelly Olynyk outplayed Anthony
Davis. Davis got, I think, 15 points, and Olynyk got, 17 or 19 whatever.
Olynyk, he was hitting the three. He was rolling off the picks with Butler. I mean, they had some good chemistry. To me, that was as good a game. What's that?
You think the Lakers want to trade Davis for Olynyk?
Straight up.
Come on, you know.
Listen.
I suspect that is not likely to happen.
Now you have to wonder what the response will be on Tuesday night with this Laker club. Because remember, these guys are in the bubble. And even though there's a two-day break coming in this series, Bob. There's a two-day break coming.
They'll all be bored as hell, but they already are bored as hell.
Well, at least they have their families there. So
one of the things that is intriguing about this, and there's no way to know whether this series would be 2-1 Miami or 3-0 Miami if Adebayo was there and Dragic was there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are both good players, both perceived to be integral to the success of the Heat, and they're absent. And yet at the same time, I don't know. Do you have a feeling that Miami is missing these two guys?
I actually think they're missing Adebayo more than they're missing Dragic.
Well,
he had been the breakout star of the bubble.
Sure.
He had been the guy, for the longest time, Miami's in the playoffs. Yeah, but Miami's not going to do anything, and they're going to fall short. And then all they kept doing was winning, and then you'd watch the games, and this Adebayo would come out of nowhere and be a factor. Now, there's going to be the hardcore basketball fan that says, what do you know? We knew he was going to be great. But, you know, in the mainstream, he has really, up until the injury, proved to be a really good depth player. He used his body. He was the difference maker for the basketball team. So do I think that Miami be up in this series? I mean, the Lakers have so much firepower. Can LeBron turn it on? Can Anthony Davis turn it on when they need to? Can Rajon Rondo take it up a notch? Probably. So perhaps it could be 2-1 Miami, but I still expect the Lakers to win, even if Adebayo is in the lineup.
Let's turn to the National Football League Week 4. And there's a few games I want to address.
Oh, no, hold on. Let me guess. Let me guess the first one.
You'll be wrong. You'll be wrong.
Well, yeah, you're just now you're being contrarian.
No. I'm going to start with the 4-0 Buffalo Bills for our friends down in Buffalo who and here's a question you probably can't answer. Although geographically you are slightly closer to Buffalo than I am. Maybe not as the crow flies, but as the car drives. Nonetheless, Josh Allen's the real deal.
Yep.
There's absolutely no question about it. There are Bills fans that can remember the Jack Kemp era.
Hold on.
Yeah. Don't tell me you can't.
No. When are you going to mention Daryl LaMonica?
Daryl LaMonica was an Oakland Raider for most of his career.
He started with Buffalo, though.
Yeah, well, and then, you know,
Jack Kemp. You're bringing up Jack Kemp. Come on. Let's talk about Lou Groza and Otto Graham too. Come on now.
Well, now you're talking about the Cleveland Browns. Now we can, I know. That's a separate conversation.
Well, I know. I mean, you're bringing up Jack Kemp.
Name me five. I was about to list a few, but name me five other quarterbacks for the Buffalo Bills. Go ahead.
Joe Ferguson.
Was
Doug
okay.
Doug Flutie.
Was okay.
Jim Kelly.
Well, he was the best of the bunch, right?
Sure he was.
Have they had a quarterback? Okay, so the point is this.
Rick Johnson.
Oh, stop. Have they had a quarterback as good as Josh Allen?
Not since Jim Kelly.
All right, it's a little early to make that comparison, and Kelly did take them to four Super Bowls?
Yes, sir. Four in a row, in fact.
Lost them all. Is Allen right now look like has the potential to be as good as Jim Kelly? Maybe better because he might actually win a big game? Is he that
well,
good?
It's a question that's going to be asked a lot in the next little while, but boy, is it early. Boy, is
well,
it
I
early.
Get that. His third year?
Third year, yeah.
Yeah, and, so.
But, you know, he's got, you know, the coaching on this club is much better than any other players had since Jim Kelly was probably on this team.
Wait a sec. Wasn't Marv the coach?
Since Kelly?
Yeah. Marv Levy.
There was a coaching philosophy. Yeah, sure. And the coaching now is, what they always wanted. You know, yeah. I mean, how many times did this team, when your buddy was the general manager, when he was always came on the show, remember him?
Hell yes.
I mean, this guy is the real deal. He's big, he's mobile. I mean, I'm not sure there's a better big man that can run from the quarterback position in the NFL. Jackson in Baltimore obviously is one, but this guy, every time he carries the ball, he surprises me. To a point where you have to be concerned. He took a little bit of a hit yesterday on that non-throwing shoulder.
Well, he took a pretty good hit.
And there was some concern. I bet there's a bit of ice on it today.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll tell you what, this guy, he can throw the ball hard, which is what's happened in football. There, like every young quarterback that comes out with some pedigree, man, can they all throw the ball? It is like, they're all throwing rockets.
Well, it was a good win yesterday for the Bills. And I mean, any win is a good win, but to win on the road and beat a team that is, I think got a chance to make the playoffs.
You think Vegas has a chance to make the playoffs?
Yeah, don't you? You don't think the Raiders have a chance to make the playoffs?
Yeah, I do.
I've been quite impressed by them.
I'm waiting for the wheels to fall off a bit.
Well, it could very well happen, but I think their talent level is pretty high. They may be another year. You know, we were all laughing at Gruden he's a dinosaur. Why did he do this? He took the $100 million contract, and he won't be able to turn the franchise around.
Well, and then started trading. Well, then he started trading, you know, their elite players for draft picks.
But look at what they've done. They've gone out and acquired a whole bunch of guys who were the top guys at big name schools. About need as much as, you know, is the philosophy of, if he's the best player at Alabama or the second best player at Alabama, I'd rather have him than the guy who's the star at Podunk State.
Sure.
And that really has been their philosophy. And I'm not here to tell you that I agree with it. I'll be interested to see how it works out. But so far, I think you got to give him credit.
Yeah, you do. But now, here was a guy at one point was not very happy with David Carr as a quarterback either. And there were tons of stories that Gruden was going to find a way to get David Carr, who had this giant contract that the Davis family signed him to, that he was going to try to find a way to get him out of there and put somebody in that was a true Grudenite. But David, and I've always loved David Carr coming out of Fresno State. I always thought he was great. But he seems to have matured and adapted pretty well as well. And I think that's part of the success. Yeah. You know, when you think about what quarterbacks do for teams, and how they change personalities of teams, and not to get off topic, but look what Joe Burrow did yesterday for Cincinnati. Too late. Yeah, I know, but quarterbacks just change the personality of a club so quickly. Look at the guy you have in Cleveland, Baker Mayfield. Holy smokes!
Well, we're going to get to him, and it's a very interesting point you make, and we're going to get to him. Let's move off the Bills for a second. Congratulations to them; they're 4-0.
By the way, Buffalo, the Seattle Seahawks are really good too.
Yeah,
because you know people down the street from people who watch our show, you know, in Vancouver are going to say all you do is like the Buffalo Bills, Seattle Seahawks, and Russell Wilson. Pretty good.
Oh, they're very good. And they have a quarterback who is now starting to get the recognition that he probably deserved 3 years ago. He is a very, very talented quarterback. And that's a very good team. Tom Brady, another guy who is about 100 years old.
I've heard of him.
Kind of stubs his toe in his first game at Tampa, loses to New Orleans. Yeah. Who we thought many people thought were going to be a 11, 12, 13 win team, the Saints.
They still could be, Bob.
Yeah, they've shown a lot of flaws. I'm not ready to give them that kind of praise. But it's gone 3-0 since then. Mm-hmm. Now, he's missing his number one wide receiver, which shouldn't mean much because he's got three others that are really good, and they haven't exactly overwhelmed teams, but they're 3-1 now, and Brady throws for 369 yards,
five touchdowns. But
I forget how old Brady is. 42
43. It was the largest gap between two starting quarterbacks. Herbert's
for, what, 22
Los Angeles, 21. So it's 22 years difference. When you think about it, Brady was already playing professional football when this guy was born.
Was born, yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Well, that's the kind of thing we're going to see, you know.
The problem, but here's the one issue with when you think about Tom Brady. You know, the last game he played for New England last season, his last throw, pick six. And you thought, oh, what a way to end a career. He's going to, you know, pick six. He's thrown three more pick sixes. He's had four of these.
He had one yesterday.
He had one yesterday again. And he, you know, again, listening post-game, he talked about it, just pure execution. But I'll tell you what, that particularly in that one where it's the out play, that, you know, you do wonder about his arm. At a certain point, now he threw the ball down the middle long, but that play to the outside, boy, that's a long way for him.
Well, let's be honest. I mean, I hear all this stuff. I'm not picking on you because you're not the only
one. You pick on me every day. What are you talking about?
No, but I'm not picking on you at this moment. Although you will perceive that I am. Tom Brady has never had a gunslinger's arm.
Nope.
When he came out of Michigan after playing what like 1 year in Michigan, he was
1 year as the starter.
Yeah, he was just a guy.
Yeah.
A guy who was cerebral, who proved he's cerebral, who proves he's a great leader, but never, never, ever was a gunslinger. Never had the arm that would impress you. No. Could he throw it deep? Yeah, he could throw it fairly deep, but he couldn't heave it 60 yards. So to talk about his diminished arm strength, which would be normal and acceptable and understandable, is sort of irrelevant because he's never been that guy. Tom Brady
is smarter than everybody else,
and he will pick you apart.
Yeah, then he better stop throwing that darn out. That's what he better start doing.
Well,
but I tell you, I mean,
easy for you to say. I'll go with Brady's decisions. If you don't mind,
You know, Mike Evans got a pass yesterday. Gronkowski. I mean, to me, that was quite a third quarter when you thought, oh, they've hit the wall. And the Chargers,
pretty good too.
Boy, oh boy, they're going to be an exciting football team.
Yeah,
they may be
2 years away because Herbert needs, you know, like every quarterback, like Josh Allen. We talked about Josh Allen, you know, pretty good in year one, better in year two, looks like much better in year three. And that's the kind of progression you want.
Are we going to talk about Baker Mayfield yet?
Well, we're going to talk about Baker Mayfield. But here's the intriguing thing. Baker Mayfield, third year, right?
Yes, sir.
First 2 years, cocky, arrogant, gunslinger, thinks he can throw it anywhere. And for a very brief period of time, it looked like he might be able to. Threw passes that were completed that he should never, ever, ever, ever have thrown. Mm-hmm. And he did that in college too. But the Browns yesterday hung up 49 on the Dallas Cowboys. And if Baker Mayfield hadn't thrown a single pass, they still would have won the game.
Probably. Well, the Dallas defense, I mean, did they show up at all?
It's hard, you know, you can make that argument.
I mean, when you think about the offensive side of the ball, Dallas doesn't have any problems with Prescott and Elliott and those guys. There's no issue. But the Dallas defense, oh, my gosh, Bob.
Well, okay. Was it the Dallas defense or the Cleveland? And this relates back to Mayfield.
Sure.
The Browns are not winning because Mayfield has figured out how to throw 40 passes in a game, complete 30 of them, and win a football game without making mistakes. I don't think he threw an interception yesterday. Baker Mayfield has been told or has learned that, excuse me, this team can win and will win with the quality of running backs that they have. Yesterday, they used how many running backs, John?
Oh, I would have said five.
Five is the correct answer. Where's my screen? Five.
Yeah, five.
One a fullback who was in there periodically to block every now and again. Chubb goes down fairly early in the, well, maybe the second quarter, second quarter. I don't remember exactly. Every guy they put into that backfield averaged 8 or 9 yards a carry.
Well, is that the
inefficiency of Dallas's defense, or is that the execution of the offensive line on the part of the Browns?
They go hand in hand in every football game that way.
Sure, to some extent.
The other thing that I find interesting with Cleveland, and you talked about Mayfield's ego and his strut, and that particularly the first couple of years. You know, there was a time in that window where he wasn't the cockiest guy on the team. And what has appeared to have happened is there has been like complete buy-in from Odell Beckham Jr. And 3 touchdowns yesterday. And he was as prolific yesterday as I ever saw him with the New York Giants.
Yep.
So all of a sudden you have two egos working together. Two guys with unbelievable talent working together, and then you have a whole roster saying, well, if these guys can A, get along, and B, share the football, and then B, as prolific as they are, then we can win as a team. I thought Beckham yesterday was...
Well, he was spectacular in every way.
Sure he was.
3 touchdowns,
yeah,
and yet one of them was on a pass from Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, yeah.
One, you know, one was a gimmicky play that was the first touchdown of the game, and the other one was the end around.
That's right. Well,
the last touchdown of the game.
That's which was the key touchdown, and this horrific tackling by the Cowboys at that point.
Well, the Cowboys looked horrific, and they looked shell shocked. And
fire the general manager.
All I'm saying is, I've seen enough of the Cleveland Browns this year to understand that philosophically they are going to run the ball more than they throw the ball. And yeah. I think, I want to say last year, John, how many teams ran more than they threw in the NFL?
Well, I don't know exactly, but my guess would be zero.
Three, I think.
Three?
Two or three.
Wow.
Yeah. And they were all success, and they all had winning records. So, you know, maybe, I'm just opining here, maybe the Browns' new coaching staff, again, has looked at this statistic, and you know sports are monkey see, monkey do.
Sure.
You know, follow the leader. Whatever works, that's what we're going to do.
But
all sports do the same thing.
But your note about coaching staff is also one that you wonder what kind of influence that's had on Mayfield too, because at a certain point when you have such a turnover of coaches in an organization, you do wonder it can have a tremendously negative effect, because you're learning the third different game plan period, you know, the playbook in your career already,
right?
Or are you saying, hey, maybe it's me. Maybe because I'm not listening to my coach enough, or I'm not listening and buying in enough, that maybe I have to just follow what the playbook says, and we can win. I don't know, but they are now. If you draft that high for this long, you better get some good players, which I think they've done. They're finally looking like a team, and they haven't looked like a team in years, Bob.
They have two great running backs in an era where the running back has been diminished to being virtually insignificant.
Well, disposable.
In most
offenses.
They're
disposable.
And what the Cleveland Browns seem to be proving is that you can win by playing ground game first. And not only can you win, you can score a lot of points. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to say it's going to go back to, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. You know, we're not going back to Jim Brown or Gale Sayers or whoever. You know, we're not going to go back to that era. But I'll tell you this. If a team like the Cleveland Browns runs the ball 60-70% of the time, and winds up having success with it, that will be the beginning of the end of the passing era. It will be the beginning of the end. The one thing that's intriguing about the ground game is it runs the clock. And
that's why
scoring 49 points in a football game where the ground game was your primary offensive weapon is really extraordinary. Because you usually don't have enough time to do that. Now, they were helped by the fact that when Dallas got the ball, it was gunslinger time.
Sure.
On the other side. And they scored points in, you know, seconds. So.
The NFL has done everything, particularly in the last decade, to ensure that quarterbacks are protected, receivers are protected, that the ball gets thrown down the field. I think football has – there's no way we're ever going back to a full running, you know, a running style first. No, I think the NFL's like the NBA. You know, like we're never not going to have the three-point play be a factor in an NBA game. I think the passing game – I mean, when you look at the greatest coach of all time. Look at Bill Belichick. And don't give me Don Shula. Don Shula was great. But Bill Belichick's the greatest coach of all time. Particularly in this game, you know, when in doubt, I mean, how many times has he's just made the running back, you know, secondary, and then his quarterback throws. Now he's got when he's healthy, the quarterback he's got now can run as well as he can throw. But I'll tell you what, the throwing game, the passing game, we're never going to see the change.
Bill Belichick is smart enough to understand he had almost inarguably the greatest quarterback in the history of professional football at his disposal for 20 years. So you use him. You don't just have him hand off the ball. Yeah, and the difference is Baker Mayfield in his first 2 years proved he ain't the greatest quarterback. Now, can he evolve into that? Maybe. But what Baker Mayfield did yesterday is hand off the ball and not turn it over. And if you do that, you can win. Now, let's move on, because we've spent too much time on this. The NHL cap is stuck at $81.5 million.
Yes, sir.
And as a result, there are plenty, according to speculation, plenty, maybe dozens of significant players that are being discussed, are available, uniquely because of this situation. There are many teams that expected the cap to be, what, 84, 85, and it's not, and they're going, holy crap, now what do we do? And the only answer is, well, only one team won the Stanley Cup, so everybody else needs to improve. Well, we better trade somebody who's pretty good so that we can get rid of his $5, $6, $8 million cap hit and try and get somebody else. Ekman Larson at Arizona.
Different situation there.
I get it.
I think the best example, Bob, is the Stanley Cup champions. The Tampa Bay Lightning.
They got a bunch of guys.
They've got a bunch of guys, and all of those guys have either no trade or no moves or limited trade clauses. So all of a sudden, Julien Brisebois is in a very tough spot in order to try to get under that 81.5 for next year.
Yeah, I know.
Whenever next year starts, in order to try to keep his team at some point together, because his big guns. Stamkos, Hedman, Vasilevsky, the goaltender, they all make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he's got to find a way to, whether it's a restricted free agent or one of their role players like Tyler Johnson or Alex Killorn, are they going to be able to move them?
What about Laine in Winnipeg? If I'd suggested to you that he might be available, 12, 18 months ago, you'd have scoffed.
Yes, totally.
But he might be.
Oh, I think he is. I mean, I don't think there's much question that he's available. Again, when you think about where the cap is, you think about what kind of dollars he makes. And then the chemistry on that hockey club. To me, the Winnipeg Jets... And we all like Paul Maurice. Randy Chevaldeos, Kevin Chevaldeos, one of the great guys. But I'll tell you what, there's a chemistry issue missing on that hockey club. And when they lost so many of their good defensemen, Tyler Myers, Dustin Byfuglien, Jacob Trouba, now they have to rebuild their blue line. But they've, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler aren't going anywhere. They're the core. And so you bring up, there's two other names that come up, Nick Ehlers or Patrick Laine. I'm sure that there are general managers, as many general managers phoning about Nick Ehlers as they are Patrick Laine.
Maybe.
But you can't, Ehlers is a lower cap hit. I would argue sometimes as effective. And so he's got cost certainty to a greater extent than Laine does. So to me, it's obvious that Laine is the one person in that system that might have to go in order to make it all work and get and put it together. So that's why I think that his name has come up.
One other situation that we have been anticipating, but that factually emerged this weekend, and I think you mentioned it, was Vegas signing Leonard to a 5-year, $25 million contract. That's no surprise. That's been the speculation for some period of time. Mm-hmm. Fleury makes more than that.
Yep.
And Fleury has been their number one goaltender. And so, I mean, is there a question in your mind that Vegas can't keep both of them?
It's going to be difficult going to be difficult to have two goaltenders and the cap hit on two goaltenders is $12.5 million.
Yeah.
That's hard.
And yet, and this is, you and I have had this conversation before. You know my opinion on this.
Yes.
You get down to the nuts and bolts, and there is nothing more valuable, more integral to success and ultimately winning a Stanley Cup than great goaltending. Now, great goaltending doesn't have to mean great goaltending over the course of a long period of time. It just might mean at the right time you have great goaltending.
Yeah.
And so goaltenders almost never drafted at the top of the draft. Goaltenders never paid the kind of money that skilled forwards or high-end defensemen get. It is something that has left me completely cold for 20 years. I don't understand it. Your most important player, ultimately, and coaches will say it, GMs will say it. You know, at the end of every game, their goaltender played better than our goaltender. That's why we lost. We'll get a better goaltender. Go pay for the better goaltender. If you're going to spend $12.5 million, their team's spending $12.5 million on one guy. McDavid makes $12.5 million, does he not?
Yes. Yeah. Pretty close.
So?
Austin Matthews.
The dilemma you have with two great goaltenders, at least theoretically, in Leonard and Fleury, is only one of them can play at a time.
Yeah, but that's right. And this is the biggest issue of the cap world. Because as you talked about, no goaltender plays 82 games. No goaltender plays 82 games.
Which is a joke, too.
Okay, Glenn Hall. Okay.
Well, there you gave the example.
Well, 500.
502?
Two. Yeah.
Consecutive games.
But
and it's a getting different on world. Buses it's, and trains between games.
Different
playing
world.
Playing Saturday night in Toronto, getting on a train, training all night to Chicago, and then playing Boston that night.
Listen, I love Glenn Hall as much as anybody. Just had his 89th birthday.
God bless.
But I'll the game is so vastly different now.
Oh, come on.
The amount of practice time with these guys, it's a different animal being a goaltender. But I understand and respect what you're saying. The bottom line is, I mean, I'm going to go off track again. Goaltending and starting pitching, right? Goaltending and starting pitching are the two positions in professional sports that have changed more than anybody, and nobody thinks anybody can go either back to having one goaltender play every game or a four-man rotation. That's just a reality of where we are in the business right now. That's exactly where we are. So when you pay a goaltender $5 million to play 55 games, you can justify it. So you literally have to put your budget together right now, particularly with the flat cap, and say, how much are we going to invest in goaltending, period, knowing full well our number one guy is going to play 50 to 60 games, and the other guy is going to play, do the math, 22 to 32 games. And what we're going to try to do is ensure that our second guy doesn't lose more than he wins. That's what we're trying to do. If you're a good backup goaltender, you better be at 500 or better. So those are the challenges that every manager has right now.
All right, so I'm going to get off this because I can't make the argument that Vegas should keep both of them.
You can't.
I can't. I can't make that argument.
No.
However, Fleury's going to go.
Yeah.
The Toronto Maple Leafs, there's lots of speculation about whether they're happy with Anderson, satisfied with Anderson, and I don't know whether they are or they should be. I kind of sit on the fence on it. He's been okay, but he hasn't brought them a playoff series victory. And I don't know.
Every once in a while, there's always a bad goal against Fred Anderson.
Yes, there is. Fleury is 35-ish, somewhere around there.
37.
North? North of that, really?
Well, I'd have to admit, let's say 35.
He's relatively speaking a little guy. Like when you see Fleury stand beside Leonard, entirely different guys. So when I watch...
One guy's nicknamed the Flower, the other guy's nickname is Panda. Yes, there's a difference in size.
Okay. In an era where big goaltenders are the norm, and yep, and what is aspired to, Fleury is the antithesis of that. I watch Fleury play, and he reminds me, okay, again, historically,
Jack Kemp?
Mike Palmateer.
Oh. Oh, no, no. Come on. Come on.
Well, he's down. You know, he flops. He this, he that. He's extremely athletic.
Yes, he is.
He is not. He doesn't just stand there and say, okay, I know you can't see any part of the net. I'm covering all of it because I'm 6'4 and 230 pounds. Yeah. No, he's not that guy. So, just as a point of comparison, if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, you take a shot at him?
I think that this is a discussion that the Maple Leafs are having, yes. I think this is a conversation that the Washington Capitals are having. I think this is a conversation the Pittsburgh Penguins are having. I think this is a conversation the Edmonton Oilers are having. And if you look at what happens in all of those franchises, you know, you're looking for something beyond what Fleury can do on the ice. He's a great leader. Everywhere he's gone, he's been called the greatest teammate of all time. Will that rub off? I think that there's something to be said for any of those clubs being able to make a push for Marc-Andre Fleury. Now, he has a list of teams that he doesn't want to be traded to. But at the same time, I think if somebody walked in and said, listen, you have a chance to play with Austin Matthews, or you have a chance to play with Connor McDavid, and you have a role to play and we respect you here, which he was told all that in Vegas too. I think anything's possible. I really think anything's possible. And this is where, you know, in our discussion last week with Alan Walsh, his agent, that we'll see what happens. Because I think that this has been something that's been on the burner for both Fleury and Walsh since it became apparent that he wasn't the number one guy in Vegas anymore.
Yeah.
See, to me, the one place I see him going to and driving everybody nuts is Washington. Simply because the Washington-Pittsburgh rivalry is so, you know, heated.
Yeah, that's a good point. And he's an ex-Pittsburgh guy.
And they just signed, the Penguins just signed Tristan Jarry to a new contract.
Right.
So Fleury to go to Washington and come into the barn every once in a while, if we have the ability to come into barn soon, that to me would be an interesting one. There's still a relationship between George McPhee and Brian McClellan. They go all the way back to living in and around the Guelph area, to going to Bowling Green, to working together at the Cap. So
right.
There's that to me is the interesting one is could Fleury end up in Washington?
All right. We could go on and on, but we're going to put everybody to sleep, and we certainly have no desire to do that, at least not for free. So let us bid you a fond adieu. Thank you, Mr. Shannon, and we will be back midweek. Should we tell them who's coming on next?
Sure.
Our friend P.K. Subban will join us, and maybe
Pernell
he'll give
Carl.
Us...
Pernell mm-hmm. Carl. Pernell Carl Subban.
That's very good that you know both his names.
Yeah, well.
But the average person knows him as P.K.
Well,
are you just showing off? Is this what?
If you start the show with him on Wednesday, hey Pernell, how you doing? I'll be really ticked.
Fine. That being the case, I may very well just do that. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, have yourselves a swell day, night, whatever the hell you're doing, whenever the hell you're doing it. We'll see you midweek with PK on the podcast. Bye bye.